We become a race of peeping Toms.
Something happened. Something was happening. I had no idea.
Where is her treacherous husband now? But in a place where she can visit, if she wished, mine. It's with the ancestors.
Yeah, I'm drinking, Luann.
How can you hold cake and not eat it?
No shit, you guys got coke here.
Oh my God, of course.
I mean, I know to you I'm just your old fat Aunt Mattie Faye. I'm more than that, sweetheart.
These are godless times, Mrs. Snell.
You're all feckin' boring. With your piddling grievances over nothing, you're all feckin' boring.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Best Supporting Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating and dissecting the performances of our favorite Best Supporting Actresses. My name is Nick Kachanov, and Dave.
And my name is Colin Drucker, and I don't look out the window in my dressing gown.
I don't even remember that line.
She was the older woman that they were, the cops were interviewing.
Oh, that's right. Might have looked like, away at that point. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. Well, you missed a very important Best Supporting older lady. But that's
yes.
You know,
it was a man or was it a woman? I don't know.
It was a woman.
Yeah,
it was a woman. Because of course today, we are here to discuss Mystic Pizza.
I've been to Mystic Pizza. Have I ever told you that story?
No. Okay. No, I've never been to Mystic Pizza. I've never eaten Mystic Pizza. I've never seen Mystic Pizza because, of course, today, folks, you know we're doing Mystic River. But,
yes.
So wait a minute. Okay. Yeah.
Before we get to the river, let's talk about
With the pizza. Yeah.
So when I was doing theater in Connecticut many moons ago, we were not far away from Mystic, Connecticut, and someone had a car, or someone in the cast that was local said, let's go take a trip. And it's a very cute little town. I don't know if you know the podcast, The Basement Yard. Do you know those two boys?
Oh.
They're the only two straight men. We need to have an in-depth conversation. Okay, this is a deep tease for the maybe after show, because
we need to talk about that.
Oh my God. Okay, so I mean, I'm like, are you a Joey or a Frankie? But Frankie said... Oh, I'm going to fuck it up. But basically, he talked about like, he's like, fuck the, like, you know, sometimes people say go to like a German town at Christmas time. So he says, fuck that. Go to Mystic, Connecticut. And then Joe like loses it. He's like, Mystic, Connecticut. But I knew exactly what he's talking about. I can only imagine how quaint and cute and just like perfect it is in the winter. But we were there kind of fall-ish. This is all to say, we went to Mystic Pizza. The pizza was fine. You know, the vibe was there. They had pictures of Julia on the wall. And we walked around and window shopped. But I feel like everything was kind of closed by the time we got there. So Mystic Pizza, there we are.
Yeah, but you had some pizza, and that's good.
Yeah.
I've never had a reason. I'm curious about seeing the movie. I feel like when I think of the movie Mystic Pizza, for some reason, the context in which I think of it, I always think of it within the context of that thing on that used to happen on TBS in the 90s, Dinner in a Movie.
Yes. Oh, my God.
We were a
Such
different
a vibe.
America. We were a very different America. Yeah. We had Dinner in a Movie, and it was like, you know... That was truly such an early version of like a parasocial relationship, you know?
Yes, because there was that specific host. Now, I might be getting my wires crossed here because I feel like there was Dinner in a Movie and maybe there was something similar to it. Like, I thought it was just one guy or one girl, but then I remember like a guy and a girl. What am I confusing this with? I know you know.
Oh, I mean,
you
listen,
have the floor.
I got the meat, Jack. So. Yeah. Dinner in a Movie was two people. It was, what was their names? It was Annabeth Gerwitch. And,
I'll look it up as you chat. Yeah.
He was really, he was cute. I remember that. Paul Gilmartin and Annabelle Gerwitch.
Okay, there it is.
But I guess in, I was going to say maybe there was a later version. But there may have been a later version of it or a spinoff version you saw that. Because Lisa Kushel hosted it from 2002 to 2005. Paul and Annabelle were only 1996 to 2002.
Okay.
And then Janet Varney did it from 2005 to 2011. So you might just be thinking of a different era, and I'm just kind of like thinking of the Miss Bliss years of Dinner and a Movie.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows what my mind was thinking, but I believe the facts, which you just spelled out for us, so thank you for that.
And if anything, hopefully what you should remember is the theme song from Dinner Movie. Beans and Cornbread, Beans and Cornbread, Beans and Cornbread. That's all I know.
You know what I think of? I think of Cindy Mindy with the, she's like, get out the kitchen and wash those pots and pans. And then she's like, yeah. Hey. She like sings in a woman octave and then she's like, hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone.
Yeah,
I know.
We're going to make steak.
We're making steak today. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I love this. I would have never thought that our Mystic River Mystic River Pizza, I'm combining them all together.
Right.
Our Mystic
right.
River episode would, that we'd talk about this. But here we need something light before we head into this because it's dark, folks.
Yeah. The waters are dark, deep, and cold in Mystic River. So we really needed to like warm up, you know, ease our way in because this movie is sad.
I cried a lot at the beginning, like when it first happens. I just didn't remember them showing her when they found her. Mm-hmm. I didn't remember like the morgue scene. Like it was very reminiscent of like a Broadchurch sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where you really feel like these are real humans as opposed to some like glossy, you know, I don't know, opposite of that, I guess. So really sad.
Yeah, it's just a heavy movie that, I mean, I don't know if the facts are here, but we are, of course, continuing a tradition this month of watching movies that you may have potentially bought on DVD in the early 2000s.
I mean, if you would have said that like 6 months ago, I'd have been like, what? But it makes perfect sense for us in this month of April, so we're going with it.
Yeah, I just know. It's like... I could close. Someone could hold up a DVD and say, do you think Nick bought this in 2004? And I would say, yes.
Yes. The answer is yes.
And I mean, I'm loving it because I also feel like it's, you know, for both of us, like 2003, that was like my freshman year of college.
Yeah.
And so like it was at this like graduated level of cataloging. And it just brings me back to a different era of my life where I kind of actually feel like I got this movie more now than I did then, but then I thought I got it. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. Oh, exactly. I mean, what was it last week or the week before? I was like, I had no idea that someone died or like, oh, who was it? The grandpa died of a drug overdose. Like I was like in college in Little Miss Sunshine, sorry, to be specific. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's just like a second chance, at seeing something that you really thought, like you were saying too, that you got everything and you felt so like grown up, but you only got a fraction of it. So
yeah,
it's really kind of wonderful to go back and revisit these.
Because I have to say, I also thought this was an excellent movie.
Same. Like, so into it. Holds up.
Yeah. So well made. I mean, just so like, I just thought like everything about it just felt like such a, like, I don't know, the kind of movie where your dad would be like, that's a good movie, you know?
Yeah, Clint Eastwood. I mean, with a name behind it like that, it's like the actors showed up and gave performances, minus one person that I feel just does not belong in this movie. And I know you know, but we'll get to them. But other than that, you're right. It's just like, it's a hell of a movie, as a dad would say.
Yeah, it's a hell of a movie. I mean, my stepdad might not fall asleep within the first 10 minutes of this like he normally does, you know?
Oh, God.
This is, you know what? It's so I was in some like IMDb rabbit hole and I stumbled across the movie The Tailor of Panama. Do you remember that movie?
I've not heard of that at all.
It's like from the early 2000s with Pierce Brosnan. And I thought, oh my God, this is a movie my stepdad would sit down to, my mom and my stepdad would sit down to watch, and he would be snoring within the first 10 minutes, and he would never see The Tailor of Panama because he would always fall asleep. And that's
of course.
It's a whole other genre of movies, the movies that Pat would fall asleep to.
Yep.
Yeah, but that. Mystic River, I think, would not be one of them because it also, from the very beginning, because when it, you know, and we'll get into obviously what it's all about, but when it opens, I thought, oh God, like a part of me was like, oh God, are we just going to like look back at like life growing up in Boston? Like how long are we going to talk about like the rough streets of Back Bay or you know, Worcester or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, it just like within a few minutes, I was just like tense and I was like, oh God, oh God. And it just sucks you in. And I was really, I appreciated that because I thought like then I was like, well, whatever happens from here, you got me, you know?
Yeah. I had so many thoughts just go through my head and now I can't remember a single one of them, but I just feel, oh, I guess here it is. When was the last time you saw this movie?
Probably 2003. I think it was, this was a, saw it in the theaters. I don't think, every time I say that, I hear it, the theaters. I went to one theater and I saw it on one screen. I mean, I feel like, you know, it's funny, especially the movies from this time. It's like, I've seen the movie once, but I've seen the 30-second commercial for it on TV probably 200 times.
Ooh, that's like very specific, yeah.
Yeah, like the shot of Marcia Gay Harden on the porch. I could print that image on a sheet cake from memory.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to talk about Marcia. Marcia Gay Harden is what I have for her.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the drag name or the drag king maybe, or maybe a girl. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Martian Gay Harden. Yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
If she was an alien. We have much to talk about because while this movie, what I love about this movie, there's so much I love about it, but now that we've mentioned the name Marcia Gay Harden, what I love about it is like, it is very much a movie about men, but the roles that the women have are like the best roles in the movie.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, that being said, did you indeed buy Mystic River on DVD? Is this indeed true?
A great question. And I would say, if I had to bet right now, I'd say yes. I'd say it's probably on, there's two places where we have our DVDs. Yes, 100%, without hesitation, because I think that's when I saw it. I bought it because I knew it was going to be great. I knew there was Oscar buzz, and I probably bought it at Barnes & Noble. Maybe at Borders if it was still around. You know, you watch it once. It's not like something you put in on a rainy Saturday, but, you know, to each his own. But yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. Well, so for anyone who doesn't know, this is certainly in a long line of Boston movies that we've even covered on this podcast.
I know.
You know, we have not done The Town about the nun monsters. It's a horror movie about nun goblins, I believe, who rob banks. But we have done Gone Baby Gone.
We have. Sorry, I was thinking of another movie that I thought we did, but we actually didn't. But go on.
What did you think we did, but we didn't?
It's the question I always ask you, but I know we talked about it, but we never did a formal episode on Doubt. I think we just talked about it the year that one of our favorite Best Supporting Actresses won. Maybe it's Penelope Cruz. I think that was the year.
We talked about Doubt a lot on that episode.
Yes.
But honestly, I would do a full Doubt episode because like... Is that Boston or is that New York? That's New York.
I thought it was Boston because I remember a certain flair that Meryl had. It could be though. I could be way wrong. Where does Doubt take place? The Bronx, New York. You are absolutely right. So never mind. Oh, technically not a Boston movie.
It feels like a Boston movie.
Yeah, it does.
It's Catholic, for God's sake. You know, you show a bunch of like repressed Catholics during like a cold, gray, snowy day.
Yeah.
It's got to be Boston, you know?
Yes. But to continue... with the movies that we have covered, unless you had another thought about Doubt, sorry.
Oh, no. Sister James. I have no doubts. I also never got to... I never went to see Doubt here in New York, and it's closing soon. Amy Ryan, but I just...
Sometimes you just don't get there, and that's all right.
It's okay. You know, Doubt is kind of like, you know, the Glass Menagerie. Every once in a while, someone else is going to do it because it's got a couple of great roles in it, you know?
Yes.
So we've done Gone Baby Gone. we've done The Fighter with the MTV girl.
Yes.
And like, they're all kind of in the same, those two movies are like around the corner from each other.
Yep.
And I feel like this might be the third. I don't know if we've got another Boston movie in our catalog. I feel like, yeah, those might be the only ones.
Yeah, we have. Those are the ones that I can think of too.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Minnie Driver and Good Will Hunting, which I guess we could if we wanted to at some time.
You know what I watched over the weekend? Because I just Googled movies that take place in Boston, and The Social Network. It's so fucking good. Another movie that I have on DVD that I just plopped in. It's so, I mean, the screenplay for that movie is unreal. It's Aaron Sorkin, like, at his peak.
Yeah.
It's great.
You love that movie.
I love that movie.
At some point. Yeah. You're always posting status updates about the Social Network.
Yes.
Nick liked this.
I did.
Status update. Nick bought this on DVD.
Listen,
I ain't afraid of no Boston. I'm down to talk about The Social Network.
Sure.
Or I don't know what else happened. What other? I'm sure. Oh, you know what? It's probably like The Departed. I'm thinking, or something with Mark Wahlberg is probably set in Boston. You know.
Yep.
But indeed, this one is set in Boston, and it is about these three boys, Jimmy, Dave, and Sean, played by Sean Penn, who plays Jimmy, not Sean, and Tim, who plays Dave, and Kevin Bacon, who plays Sean. Did I say Tim, who plays Dave? Tim Robbins. See, the thing
is,
Susan and I are so close, so I just call him Tim, Sarandon, obviously. big ping pong pals.
Oh,
and
my
so
God,
anyway,
yes.
Oh, she loves her ping pong. She loves her spin. So anyway, so when they were kids, Dave was picked up by some child predators and was, locked away for a few days, was abused, eventually escaped, and obviously just kind of fucked him up. Flash forward to the present, and they're all kind of living in this, you know, it's still in Boston, but all their lives have all drifted apart. Now Jimmy is married to his second wife, Anna Beth, played by Laura Linney. He's got his daughter from his first marriage, Katie. Tim Robbins, or Dave, is married to Celeste, who I believe is Anna Beth's cousin, played by Marcia Gay Harden.
Okay. I love
that. And Kevin Bacon, Sean, is now a detective in Boston, and they are all brought together again when Jimmy's daughter, Katie, is murdered. And many signs are pointing to Dave as the murderer. Unfortunately, poor Celeste bears the weight of that news. And then it just kind of devolves into this investigation that Sean is doing with Whitey Powers, played by Lawrence Fishburne. And of course, Jimmy's own attempts to solve this crime and all of the tragedy that ensues from there.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. It's a lot of moving parts. And I dare even say, not completely, but like the twist of this is kind of Mayor of Easttown-ish. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. Which, you know, it's funny, like saying how doubt feels Boston, you know, like Boston movie-ish. Mm-hmm. I feel like Mayor of Easttown bears a lot of the same feelings.
Yeah.
It's the working class, you know, the working class Irish Catholic foibles. That's kind of what
the running theme is.
You know?
I want to know what was going to be served at that first Holy Communion. Like the food. Jimmy was probably never more proud. You know, he's just working the crowd. Like, I bet Jimmy's a good time, but he's also, don't fuck with Jimmy.
Oh, yeah, because Jimmy, we know that Jimmy's done time in the past. He's gone to prison. They've all kind of had their own versions of rough and sordid lives. And I feel like Sean obviously became a cop and, you know, an attempt probably to get as far away from that life and go as straight as possible versus, you know, the path he could have gone if he stayed closer to Jimmy, for example.
Yeah, I have to say this off the bat, too. I really love Kevin Bacon in this movie. I feel like oftentimes he might not be considered like a prestige actor, but he's been in the game for so long. Like, I just love him, and I thought he was great. Just wanted to say that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like he, you know, obviously there's a lot of awards recognition for this movie, and he was not necessarily one of them, or even someone you kind of remember. Like, I would kind of be like, oh, wait, who's Kevin Bacon's in this? Oh, yeah. But he, what I like about him is there's, especially in this cast, and at least among the men, I feel like he is the most, like, approachable energy in a way. Yes. Like, I kind of feel like Sean, I trust the most, I guess, in a way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's something, even though, which is interesting because he's the cop, you know, like it feels like it should be the opposite. And I might need your help. And well, I guess we'll just talk about Sean a little bit more here. So his wife, girlfriend left him. They had a baby, you know, a fresh baby, like, you know, a baby. And, like, I just didn't understand all those phone calls. Like, she just couldn't speak to him. Like, are we meant to just put the pieces together? Like, that there was some tumultuous sort of thing? Did he abuse her? Like, what do you think that is?
Yeah, I don't know, because it really is kind of mysterious. And then when it all kind of gets resolved at the end, it's like, oh, maybe there wasn't, like, a twist to this. This was just Sean and his, you know, wife or whoever, you know, partner were, you know, had gotten into a fight. She had left him maybe 6 months ago. She had the baby. She wouldn't, you know, she'd call, but she wouldn't say anything. And it seemed like what finally broke it was him just like finally admitting that he was, you know, that he was wrong and that he missed her and was at fault. And like, that was basically what she was waiting for. And I don't know. I mean, what all of that made me think of is there are those couples that break up and get back together and break up and get back together. And
you know what? I'm going to go stay with my sister and you can just fuck off. I'm taking the baby. You know, one of those. Yeah.
One of those. And it can be the messiest fucking breakup, but 2 weeks later, they'll be back together.
Fucking and, like bunnies. Yeah.
Yep. But it's just going to cycle and repeat. And I kind of felt like the switch that happens at the end and how he's suddenly like, you know, driving to go see his girl. I was like, oh, this is the euphoric high that comes. This is why you guys, this is kind of actually why you, I think a lot of those couples keep fighting like that is because I think there's like this addictive high to the getting back together.
Yeah. Instead of solving their problems, you know, it's just like, let's just forgive each other, come back together and rinse and repeat maybe in six months. Yeah.
And then we can like just do a little honeymoon period again each time we break up.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what this felt like to me.
Yeah. But all that aside, I thought he was really spectacular in this and like really, I guess like the voice of reason in a lot of ways. And I do think, and this is to say nothing of Lawrence Fishburne, who I also thought was great and the only person of color in this movie. So happy to see him there. A deep tease for the after show, but I finally watched The Matrix with Keon.
Oh,
this past week. So, and he's great in that. Mm-hmm. And I thought him and Kevin Bacon were great together. And but I liked that sort of inner conflict of like, these are the guys I grew up with. So it's like to believe that Dave could do something like this and how, you know, he was kind of right in the end that Dave didn't do it. But, you know, there's some nuance there. But yeah, really loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Normally like in these kind of movies, the detective duo in suits, I'm like, oh, God, let me know when they're off the screen. You know, let me know when they're talking to a woman, you know?
Yes.
But I liked them, and I kind of felt like in this situation where everybody else was kind of conflicted or was a little, I didn't really know where to sit with the rest of the neighborhood, with the Boyles and the Markhams and whatnot. I thought like Sean and Whitey were like, okay, like I think they're being real. This wasn't like Gone Baby Gone where you find out then at the end that like there's a twist and Morgan Freeman did it or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, because if everyone is like that hard-ass Boston energy, it's just going to be rough. There has to be some softness. And I think that's what Sean and Whitey both kind of brought to this. It was a good balance.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's generous of us to recognize them first, because obviously there was a lot of other recognition for this cast. And this is one of those best actor, best supporting actor duo wins, because both Sean Penn and Tim Robbins won Oscars for this movie.
I love that. And I knew Tim Robbins won, but I didn't know this is Sean Penn's first Oscar. That was interesting. Yeah. I rewatched their acceptance speeches before we recorded too. And, good speeches all around. I feel like Sean Penn's a pain in the ass. And I think maybe that was during his Milk speech where he's like, yeah, I'm kind of a pain in the ass. And everyone just kind of like laughed nervously. But I think Tim Robbins is one of those guys that was just so... He seems like a cool guy. I mean, I know him and Susan are not together anymore, correct?
She called you up. Over a round of Pong, she was like, yeah, so Tim and I. Yeah. I told Ryan Murphy, you need the plot for your next feud series. I got it for you. Yeah.
Yes.
Tim and Sue.
But go on. I we're talking about awards. I know that and the only other nomination, as I continue to talk after I tell you to go on, was Marcia Gay Harden for Best Supporting Actress. And this is a couple years after she won for Pollock. So, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of love.
Indeed, this was we're certainly going to talk about Celeste, but this was a much deserved nomination for Marcia Gay Harden. And then Laura Linney was nominated for the BAFTA for Best Supporting Actress, and Marcia Gay Harden was not.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is an interesting
choice. Should we talk about Laura? Should we talk about Laura?
I think we should. I think why should we talk about all these men and not talk about Laura? Because, it's worth mentioning just at the top here that there's a lot of like alums of the podcast, so to speak, here. We loved Sean Penn and I Am Sam. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Bacon, we talked about in Crazy Stupid Love.
Oh, my God.
And,
yes.
Yeah. Marcia Gay Harden was the therapist in The First Wives Club.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, Laura Linney. I mean, credit to you for bringing the savages to this podcast, because I think we both really responded to Laura Linney in The Savages. I feel like... I remember deeply identifying with her.
I know. Wendy Savage is one of my like all-time favorite heroines. And yes, I'll say heroine, even though she's deeply flawed in that movie. But I feel I love her. Loved her in that, which, makes me feel good because I did not love her in this. I was not buying it, Gia. This is the person that I was just like, I don't know why she's in this world. She's perfectly capable. I like the idea of her character, but it's very thin. I don't know. What did you feel? Did you like her? How do you feel?
I did.
You did?
Oh.
Okay, go on.
And we can, listen, you and I will never agree on Ruth Gordon, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I feel like, this was a bit of a thing with Mare and any of these Boston movies, is that you get someone who has to then put on what is a very heavy accent, like in and of itself. It is not, they say there's romance languages and then there's German. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so this is not Italiano. This is German, and where it's just like, oh, it's not pretty, but it's accurate. And I feel like the challenge with that is it's really hard to be able to tell, like, is Laura Linney doing a really good Boston accent? And the Boston accent she's doing is just not pleasing, or is Laura Linney doing a terrible version of a Boston accent? Mm-hmm. I literally don't know. I love Laura Linney, and I think that she, I think that what's interesting about her role is that it is fairly thin throughout most of the movie. She gets to, she had the scene at the morgue where she was like, she's like, tell him, come on, Jimmy, come on. She does that. The whole, mother in denial moment is great acting. And, she's just an interesting kind of like energy. And I remember feeling like something happens. And then that scene in the bedroom at the end, and I was like, are you fucking kidding me, Laura? And I remember feeling this way the first time I saw it. Was like, all of a sudden at the end for like 2 minutes, you realize that Annabeth is Lady Macbeth.
Yes. Yes. I was just going to say it. I'm so glad you did. Yep.
And the way that she just like dominated that scene after being kind of a minor character otherwise, I think that best supporting actress maximizing potential with limited possibilities thing all the bells were hit for me. And I was like, I can't believe the movie gave this scene to Annabeth. I can't believe we got to see her do this. And oh my God, I just fucking loved it. I loved the fact that Annabeth got this scene, because I love when a minor character gets the movie for a minute, you know?
I see that. I could recognize that. And I did really love when she's at the parade and she's watching Celeste just like bounce around like a ping pong ball on the other side of the street, and she just gives her that like stare because she knows. Yeah.
Because she knows, and she wants to be the queen on the arm of the king of this town.
Yep.
And I think what I loved is that when we didn't know this is who she was, but I think when you kind of look at the larger context, she married Jimmy after he got out of prison. This is the kind of woman who's he's got a prison sentence. Who cares? He's got the tattoos. He's got a tough past. There's a gun in the house. She still had two more kids with him. And I just thought, oh, that's interesting. In the context of like, she's not, we see her in that, obviously, you know, breaking down with Jimmy, but like, obviously, you know, her daughter just got, or, you know, whatever, stepdaughter just got killed. Yeah. It made me want to watch the movie again and just keep an eye on Annabeth of like, are there more hints to that woman we saw in the bedroom who was just like, you know, slithering around Jimmy like a snake?
Yeah. I think going back to her accents, because it's a great thing to bring up, that was the first thing that it reminded me of, like the Davine Joy Randolph accent in The Holdovers. It almost feels like, is she wearing the accent or is the accent wearing her for both of them? And it's like by a hair. It just feels like it shouldn't be coming out of her mouth. I don't know how else to say it. I just feel that I would have cast her differently, but I did like that last scene. But by the end of it, I was just, I thought like, where have you been? But now with you saying just in this episode that I did not pick up on during the movie or forgot about it, that it was her stepdaughter and not her actual daughter. Cause I just feel like the mother, it's almost like a gender role flip that like Jimmy is trying to find this killer more so than Annabeth. Because it kind of would be either a pair of them together or Annabeth would just be like out for blood. So kind of I was just like, where have you been, Annabeth? But it is a great scene. It's like that seduction and just like you're the king and you've got four hearts and you're going to do whatever it takes to protect this family. And I don't care what you did. So your secret's safe with me. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I just you're selling me a little bit, but overall I was just like, I don't know, Laura, but I love Laura. I don't know.
I know, right? I mean, and she says earlier in the movie, she says something to Jimmy about like, just remember you have two other daughters. And I feel like there is probably, because, you know, it's based on a book by Dennis Lehane. Probably pronouncing that wrong, but I learned from reading.
That sounds right.
But I feel like maybe in the book, there's more of a narrative of the fact that like Annabeth indeed is not, you know, is a little bit removed, and like at the end of the day, like, sure, you know, obviously she's upset that Katie was killed, but like that it's not the mother in mourning. But you know, and of course not to, you know, discount step parents, because, you know, my stepdad wouldn't have fallen asleep if I died. You know what I mean? He'll fall asleep for the Tailor of Panama, but he cares.
Yes.
But I think it does make it more interesting. I think this was similar to in Little Miss Sunshine, when it was like, oh, I think Greg Kinnear's character is Paul Dano's stepfather.
Yes. Yeah, yes. It adds layers. And it felt like, I guess at the beginning I was like, oh, she's just the wife. And then at the end I was like, oh, you're kind of like Carmela Soprano meets like Lady Macbeth.
Yeah.
And I was like, but if that's what you are, I wish I would have got maybe a little more of it to kind of set me up for that last scene. But overall, I still think that last scene is effective. I just maybe wanted a little bit more to like see how I felt about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, the glance across the street at the parade was pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, it. You know, I found the whole movie interesting, but anytime the women were on screen, I was like, more, just give me more of this. Because, like, yeah, I would love to just get, I would love it if this was a little bit more about Annabeth and a little bit less about, I don't know, the investigation. I never find investigations the most interesting part of a movie, even if I like the cops, unless it's Olivia Colman, obviously.
Of course, yes.
Well, you know, I think that I don't want to wait. You know, just like Paula Cole, I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait to talk about Marcia Gay Harden. I want to talk about her right now.
Celeste.
Okay, this is a phenomenal performance.
Yes, I am ready for Pollock. I am ready.
I was going to say, I really think we've opened the doors for Pollock, and I think I'm finally ready to walk through them.
I mean, she's just perfect. And like the fact that she is like not capable of handling any of this, but also like, it's like she's stupid, but she's not. Like she knows what's happening, but also like her assumptions against, it's like, how much does she know about Dave to begin with? You know, it seems like their marriage has always just been sort of touch and go. And that whole, I mean, the whole scene when she really kind of confronts him when he's watching that vampire movie, when she says Dave, there's so much in even just Dave. Like she's like, she's annoyed, but it's also like accusatory at the same time. And it says so much. They're like, they're asking me what time, like she gets into this lower register that I know you probably picked on too. And I'm just picked up on, and I'm just sold.
Yeah. I love the agony of, and the weight on Celeste's shoulders throughout this, and just really I think the question of like how much does she know Dave, like what we've seen is like Dave see like before all of this he seems like kind of a quieter energy, maybe he's got a bit of a dopiness to him, you know, I don't know. I think Tim Robbins does an excellent job in this role, like just, and she's it seems like a nice lady who, you know, they had a nice connection, blah blah, but like it does raise the question of like, for example, in that scene, like I feel like she's learning for the first time probably a lot of details about what he's feeling and what he experienced as a kid, more than just him saying the names of the two men. I feel like I would imagine someone like Dave was like, you don't need to know. You don't want to hear about it. Like, he's not the kind of guy to be like, well, here's what happened to me for 4 days, you know?
Yeah, it feels like very few people know or have sort of put the pieces together themselves, you know, maybe people that are super close with him. But it feels like you're saying that she doesn't know that. And for him to open up like that is just, I mean, and he's just so unhinged in that scene, like a quiet sort of unhinged. And like my favorite part is after he leaves and she's just like, okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. like they didn't have to do that, you know?
No, to give her like the last few seconds of the scene. Absolutely. They didn't trim the fat off of it. I love that. You know, it's worth acknowledging, because I would have loved to see this role win her an Oscar. I think I think it hits every BSA like whistle tone for me. Mm-hmm. It is squarely a supporting role. It has its own energy, its own frequency. Every moment Marcia Gay Harden's on screen, she's doing something. There's so much just like subtext to all of her like facial expressions and her body language. And I just think it's worth recognizing that all of that hard work put her in the Best Supporting Actress category that year with the likes of Holly Hunter in the movie 13, which I have not seen. Patricia Clarkson in Pieces of April, which is a great movie. Really great movie. It might be fun to do sometime. Shora Agdashlu in House of Sand and Fog. She is great in that. That movie is so depressing. That's another Jennifer Connelly movie. That was during the prestige picture era.
Yes.
But unfortunately, all of them lost out to Renee Zellweger in Cold Mountain.
Get out. Get out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like this, what would you call it? Like a butterfly effect of just like you won the wrong year. So therefore a great performance has to be looked over. And that is like a peak example of that. She should have won for Chicago, but we had to give it to Nicole for The Hours, who probably should have won for like Moulin Rouge or maybe something down the road, like Lion or something, you know, like she would have had more opportunities. And one could argue that, you know, Virginia Woolf isn't a lead performance because they're all sort of divvied out evenly. And now I hate Renee Zellweger even more for that. I know it's not her fault, but I hate that performance even more now because of this.
Yeah, sick. I know. Sick. Because I really, yeah, I think that Marcia Gay Harden is, like, I love, I think the most gripping scenes in the movie are any of the interactions between Celeste and Jimmy.
Yes, agreed. I mean, let's talk about her stay on the stoop, waiting for them to come home. Go on, yes.
Oh, my God. Because their first, like, brief scene together is, I think, the night of the wake, and they're in the kitchen having a drink together. And it's a quick scene, but it's just, like, it gave me that first taste of, like, oh, Celeste and Jimmy, this is, let's see more of this. And then, obviously, she goes to this movie just, you know, because what happens that Dave comes home that night, the night that Katie dies, he comes home, you know, he's been slashed. He's got blood on his hands. He makes up this, or he has this whole story about there was this guy who tried to mug him and he fought him off and he beat him up. And so the big thing for Celeste is like, nothing in the paper, Dave, haven't seen anything in the paper about him. And that's kind of like also keeping her suspicious. And so obviously over time, you know, and with Dave's revelations, it's like putting the pieces together of like, oh God, I think he killed Katie. And so, yeah. And so Jimmy gets back to the house with the Savage Brothers, who are just a nightmare. I mean, I feel like, oh God.
My God. It makes me so nervous even watching them, like how loud, I think I turned the volume down when they were on. They were just so loud. And but they're probably like 5'5" each. You know what I mean? Like they're probably they're just little meatballs, little Boston meatballs.
Yeah.
But they're
all
so terrifying. And you know exactly who those assholes are who grew up in the neighborhood that unfortunately are related, not related, but, you know, kind of related because it's probably, you know, they're probably considered uncles by like Jimmy's kids, you know, and I hate them.
Well, one of them, I think, was Katie's godfather.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, I think he had said that at one point. Like, yeah, she was my godchild, you know, and whatever.
Yeah,
whatever it was. But anyway, so they get back to the house. The brothers go inside, and Jimmy and Celeste sit on the porch and talk. And that's when she finally opens up to Jimmy about like feeling like, you know, suspicious of Dave. And I think it's Jimmy who says, "Do you think, you know, do you think Dave killed my daughter?" And Celeste like nods and says yes, and then just like
heaves,
and the way that he holds her, and she's just heaving into him, and it's so everything about that, I thought like someone like Uta Hagen would go nuts for this scene, because you have to think about like all of the narratives that are happening right now, all of the things that are happening, and the choices, and the fact that like what she's dealing with and what he's realizing, but his protection of her, like just the way that when they sit down on the porch before she even breaks, he like puts his hand on her back. And it's just like you kind of see what Annabeth sees of like, yeah, this guy's the king. You know, you're meeting with the godfather here.
Yeah, but it's there's part of me that like there's so much rage in that realization, too, that he like, and she's obviously not directly responsible for it, but she's like a connection to that. It almost feels like if he could, he would have like shaked her. Why does that sound weird coming out of my mouth?
Shook her.
Thank you. Jesus Christ. Like shook her to get the answer out because she was just like so, but it wasn't that way. That's not the direction it went to. It almost felt like he just wanted to like push her aside and then just like get those two assholes to go kill Dave like on the spot.
Yeah, well, that was what was so interesting was like the, like you could feel obviously like, oh God, like he's, you know, he's ready to kill, but like the fact that he was, I don't know, like just the choice that was being made of him to like hold her closer and to like kind of comfort her. I think instead of acting on his like rage to kill Dave, to like be the king comforting this poor woman whose husband was a killer, you know, it was just an interesting dynamic. And I don't know. I feel like this role, I feel like Sandy Dennis would be really interesting in a role like this.
Yes.
I feel like, the late, great Barbara Harris would knock this role into the river.
Yeah, it's a very Honey type role.
Yeah. Yeah. That scene when Sean, when they get to Jimmy's house and Celeste is leaving earlier in the movie, and then Sean's like, I left my notepad in the car. And he, catches up with Celeste. That scene, her body language, just the way that she's like, I was like, this is incredible. This woman is fucking incredible.
I know, she's so guilty and she's not good at hiding it, but she's trying her best, but she's not equipped to deal with it. Like she's a good person at the end of the day. And I think there's, going back to how Jimmy even treats Celeste, like he could have said, like, what do you know? Tell me what you know. But they're kind of going to find Dave anyway. So like Jimmy's smart enough to be like, okay, I think I can kind of get at least some confirmation here. And he's so gentle with her because he knows her. They've been, they've been family for years and years. And like, he's not going to get anywhere by yelling at her either, too. So again, the two of them are amazing. And that other scene with Kevin Bacon is just, she's so good.
She's so good. Honestly, this is one of my favorites this year so far. She's just incredible. I could watch this performance all day.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then at the end, I mean, like, the most fascinating thing was just like Celeste at the parade, like looking for Dave and realizing like, oh God, like, he's probably dead. And I just thought that was like, again, like I thought for the, I love that the movie kind of as it was ending, it really made the women the most interesting by the end. Cause I felt like, Jimmy was, those stupid sunglasses were on.
Oh my God. King, yes.
The king was in his throne. And I felt like by the end, Sean was like, I don't see nothing. I'm just here with my wife and my baby. And Jimmy, there was just they had closed off. They closed off like repressed Irish Catholic, men from Boston. And so really I guess in a way it was like, I don't know. Celeste was the one left holding the bill for all of this tragedy that just happened,
Oh yeah, it's just so fascinating to watch because she runs into Sean first, and like my question would be like, did you find Dave? But she just like the way that he looks at her, and like he's so put together with the family, like he's one, and same with Jimmy, and she's just like, to watch her sort of spiral. There's like some tears welling up, but then she's like, there's a part of her that maybe just wants to like, I guess, blend in with the crowd and not like make anyone seem like concerned about her at all, because she's yelling Michael's name and he's not like seeing her at all. But she's the one who also left him like 3 days ago or 2 days prior to that too. So, but right. Of course, it's still your husband. But oh my gosh, poor Celeste.
Poor Celeste. Well, and of course, like obviously the revelation at the end that indeed Dave did not kill Katie, but that it was it was the Harris, just Ray Harris's mute son, who he and his friend were just playing around and then accidentally killed her. It was a little confusing because then there's also Katie's soon to be fiance, Tom Geary, who was the kid in The Sandlot. I know him. But he played Brendan Harris, the realization it was indeed very Mayor of Easttown that like, oh my God, it was not my Ryan, not my silent Ray Harris, obviously that scene at the end when Jimmy is just like sitting there collapsed on the on the curb, and Sean's like, we got him. We got a confession. And it was just really, I think, that Shakespearean tragedy, and why Annabeth's sort of Lady Macbeth moment after felt so Lady Macbeth was like, this was such a classic, going back to the Greeks, this was such a classic tragedy moment.
Yeah. I have to say that Tom Geary is also excellent in this. Like sort of like, talking through tear scene when Whitey and Sean come to the house, because then we get to meet Brendan's mom, Esther.
Oh, Queen Jenny O'Hara. This woman was born to, she's done this role. I've seen her in this kind of role a number of times.
Of course.
She is so good. I'm trying to see what else have I seen. Oh, of course. She's known for being in this movie Devil, where it turns out she's the devil.
Whoa.
But I've seen her as the like, oh, what are you fucking doing, old lady, in so many things.
Yes.
And the, you know, brash Boston, you know, mother. I'm looking at her IMDb if there's anything we've.
Yeah, I feel like there's something. It's like if you can't get Shirley MacLaine, you get Jenny O'Hara.
Absolutely.
She just feels like a Walmart, like she's a top quality actress, but she feels like a Walmart version of Shirley MacLaine because of the roles that I think of her in. Just
right.
Like the line, like, just like your father, huh? You're leaving? Like, just like in that pink and blue robe. Oh my God. Mm-hmm.
Oh God, that robe. Yeah. She was in 6 Feet Under in an episode.
Okay.
That.
6 Feet Under.
Six Feet Under. Oh yeah. Oh, she was in Mystic River. Yeah. What has she been in that we have talked about?
There's probably something, but I'm glad that we she's back on my radar because I forgot about her.
Yeah, she's great. Well, I know that there's a movie that I have in my, like, I've saved it in my IMDb watch list that she's in, that it's like a smaller movie, but she's like the star of it. And I was like, oh, that would be nice to see. I think it's called Killing Eleanor. And I think there's some interesting women in it where, you would appreciate this. It co-stars Jane Kasmarek.
Oh, Queen Jane.
It's about a terminally ill old lady who wants to die on her own terms, who convinces a self-destructive addict to help kill her in exchange for clean urine.
All right.
I don't know. I don't know the main girl, but Jane Kasmarek is in it. Rusty Schwimmer, who played the sister of Miss Minchin in A Little Princess.
Love her.
Cameron Mannheim. David Eigenberg, who played Miranda's husband, Steve.
Of course.
Yeah.
I think I might have cracked the case. I think I might know where I know her from.
Where?
And she was in, don't judge me for this, I've only seen a couple episodes, and they probably weren't even full episodes, but she's in Mike and Molly.
Oh, yes, she is in Mike and Molly. You love that show.
I mean, I hate that show, but I think, is she... She plays, because I think she's not Swoozy Kurtz, excuse me. And then there's the other mom. Maybe I'm getting, well, she is a Mike and Molly, but maybe she's not the mom who I'm thinking of. Oh, because it's, here we go, $25,000 pyramid.
Bring it on.
Oh, she won the Featured Actress Tony Award for August Osage County.
Oh, Rondi Reed.
Rondi Reed, yeah, the Rondi Reed Rooney Roundup.
The Rondi Reed Rooney Roundup.
So she is not Rondi Reed. She was also in, I'm going to have to just research this offline, as they say in the corporate world.
I'll
report back.
Do your Jenny O'Hara research. Yes. I would love to mention another alum of the podcast, an uncredited Eli Wallach.
As Mr. Looney was his name, because I did find him in like the full cast, but the liquor store owner, I gasped. I was so happy to see him.
Oh, what a great little role. I mean, he was giving me big time Sophia Petrillo. It was just, who's Estelle Getty in Golden Girls. But yeah, I saw in the trivia, he was like, yeah, he said he did it in one take without any direction because Clint just trusted him that he knew his lines. And I thought, you know, Eli Wallach may be the only person who I'll believe if he said that, you know?
Yep. Like him and Elaine Stritch.
Yeah.
She's made
right,
it up just, as she went. Yeah.
Yeah. Leave them alone. Let them do their thing. But yeah. Because, of course, we talked about Eli Wallach in The Holiday.
Arthur, and, yes.
Arthur.
So
and I'm sure we'll find another opportunity to talk about Eli Wallach.
I hope
maybe
so.
In our 60s era, we'll get a little Eli Wallach in there. But he was, a great addition. I would expect him as, like, the liquor store owner in Brooklyn. But I'm like, Boston, whatever.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah.
It tracks.
Yeah. Did you have any other? I mean, this was, I would say this was a, like, one of my thoughts watching this was like, you know, what I love a lot of things about doing this podcast, but one of the things I love about it is that it gives me a reason to watch at least one potential quality thing every week. And I thought this, this was like filet mignon.
It really was. I guess my I know we didn't talk too much about Tim Robbins because this is also his Oscar win. I do feel like, like I said, he's been in the game for a while. I think this is like a textbook Best Supporting Oscar win. I think he's like really great in it. It's not just a career Oscar, but it kind of feels like there's a little bit of that sort of push behind it. And I do think Sean Penn is extraordinary in this. Like,
oh,
his,
yeah,
his like, here I am moments when he's, when he says, is my daughter in there, is just like so devastating. And I have to say this, this is all, it almost kind of made me laugh a little bit when he walks into the bar for like the final act when they're about to kill Dave. And he walks in that leather jacket and like a turtleneck, like a mom after church on Sunday. It was just going to like, let you have it because you had the giggles. And she's, you know, it's just so funny. It's just like, mom's here and she's gonna fucking annihilate you.
Absolutely.
I just loved it.
She's got her turtle shell sunglasses on.
Yes,
she's
got the church
pocketbook. Yeah, absolutely. Get in the car. Get in the car. Yeah, I know that, mom. We're not going to Dunkin' Donuts. I know that.
That's the best.
Yeah. No, I thought this was, I thought this was great. I thought, yeah, Sean Penn was incredible. I was so glad to see he won an Oscar for this because I thought like, oh man, this is, you know, I don't normally get excited about men, but like this man is wringing the fucking rag out in this movie.
Yeah. And as you mentioned before, my last note about him was the shades, the sunglasses. They're a prop almost. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you know, it's worth mentioning that Clint Eastwood not only directed this, but he wrote the score as well. And it is like a beautiful little piece of music.
It is. There's something, I don't know if it's like a church hymn, but it almost said it smells like one.
it sounds like one.
Yeah, I could smell the incense. At the very beginning, like during the First Holy Communion, and then it also comes back like when they realize that that Katie has passed too. That's very sad, but so effective. And I forgot about that. I knew that he dabbled in that, which is also so cool. Clint.
Yeah. Clint. I and maybe you saw this, but you know, there was a rare appearance from Clint Eastwood at some Jane Goodall like event or something, talk that she was doing. And I guess he's in his 90s now and looked it. And I was like, oh, wow, that really is that thing. Not just celebrities, but anyone when you don't see them for a while. And it's like, oh, wow. I just assumed you would look like the, you know, get off my lawn, old Clint.
Trouble
like,
with the Curve with Amy Adams. Isn't that one movie? Oh, I don't know what it is.
The Trouble with the Curve?
Yes. Have you heard of it?
The Trouble.
Oh,
with
Colin, you gotta. Oh. I've never seen it. I don't think I ever would, but it sounds like a good airplane movie. I feel like the Netflix. It's probably not on Netflix, but I feel like the Netflix poster would just be ridiculous. Yeah, Amy Adams.
Oh, it's a baseball movie.
John Goodwin. Goodwin. Goodman. It was
Justin Timberlake. Oh, Clint's gorgeous son, Scott, though. I mean,
I was about to say it before, Scott. Is he in the movie? No.
He just wanted to say that. He is in it. He is in the movie. But there's a lot of hot Scots out there. I don't know if we've talked about it in this podcast, and maybe I should save this for the after show, but like, of all the hot Scots, I'm a Scott Conn lawyer.
I was going to say that was another Scott I thought of. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, what a short king. Definition
short
of.
Short king.
Yes.
I mean, just shortbread. Just, I would just.
Gobble him up.
Gobble him up.
Very much like that sort of Jersey, New York sort of toughness, you know?
Uh-huh.
He's got that hair slicked back.
I would give that man anything he wanted. I'd make him manicotti every night.
Yeah.
I'd get to the kitchen and start cooking. Like Cindy.
Oh my gosh. Get out the kitchen and wash that. Cindy Mindy.
Cindy Mindy. Cindy Mindy. You know, where's her? Cindy Mindy as Celeste.
Oh my God. Cindy Mindy as like Esther in that pink robe, you know? Like, I could see that too.
Yeah.
Let's
get that acting career going for Cindy. She would have been such a gem as one of the coworkers in Hysterical Blindness.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Oh, you met a guy with a house.
as you did she... in the end, like the teacher's lounge or whatever it was, the work lounge.
Yeah, the break room. Yeah.
I think that's one thing. I mean, this is like a near perfect movie for me. I'm just so glad that we watched it. But I would have loved to have seen a little bit more of that, like, Mayor of Easttown community. You know, it's like I wanted like a group of women to be helping. I guess it doesn't make sense, though, because Annabeth is self-sufficient. She doesn't need the help, you know, but like Celeste is kind of there for her because Celeste doesn't know what else to do. And Celeste is not going to confide in Annabeth about any of it. I don't know. I'm just thinking this through, but I guess it is. We don't need it.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, the thought of the, you know, the Macbeth kind of lens of it, obviously, if Annabeth is Lady Macbeth, the idea that Celeste could be Lady Macduff, favorite character.
Yeah.
Lady Macduff, my absolute, it's probably, not that I know Shakespeare that well, but probably my favorite character in any Shakespeare play that I've ever read is good old one scene wonder Lady Macduff.
That's beautiful. I love that. I mean, really, there's so much of this that I feel is already kind of, or like a lot of things were, I almost said like, you know, Mystic River really inspired a lot of true crime movies and TV shows, but you never know. I mean, Mayor of Easttown, it feels, you know, everyone sort of borrows stuff from previous works of art, and maybe Mystic River did from something else, but I do think that this is one of our bests.
Yeah, I think it's just a great, I want to text my stepdad and be like, hey, you should watch Mystic River.
Yeah.
I just want to tell all of the men in my life, you need to watch Mystic River.
It seems like something that you can watch with your dad, which is a very slim category for at least me as well. But I guess, not to put you on the spot, but maybe you still have the Oscar stats still up, but what did win Best Picture that year? Because I know this is nominated for it.
Amongst
a whole bunch of other things. And, you know, unfortunately, Marcia Gay did not win, but yeah.
No, I was excited. I thought you would really appreciate this because the Best Picture nominees that year included Lost in Translation, Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World. You love that movie. Seabiscuit, Mystic River. And then you know what won?
What?
The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah. I mean, that movie is awesome. And I think that there was so much. I just saw a TikTok today about an interview with Peter Jackson about how, like, that's kind of a historic win, really, in a way, because it's, you know, fantasy is not rewarded in that way so often. And for it to win, and it was just, like, such a, almost feels like a Marvel movie of the time, you know, different genre for sure. But
right.
It was just a cinematic achievement that the popular vote won that year, and Mystic River is a close second. Should have maybe.
Yeah. I feel like, the Return of the King was one of those movies that won all the technical awards.
Yes.
But like wasn't represented in the acting category at all, but like won every other award possible, basically.
Yeah, I feel like they weren't going to give any love. They very well could have. Even Sean Astin is so great in that. And Elijah Wood is also great. They could have if they wanted to, but I understand why they didn't, at least in that time. But that's an interesting win. Ugh.
Well, if they nominated Sean Astin for, like, let's say, Best Supporting Actor, then they couldn't have nominated Alec Baldwin for The Cooler.
Oh, my God, yes, because I watched the acceptance speeches, and I will say this to go away from Best Supporting for a second, that Bill Murray looked pissed that he didn't win. He looked pissed to be there. He looked pissed that he didn't win. But yeah, Alec Baldwin. That's so interesting.
Yeah. Johnny Depp got nominated for Pirates of the Caribbean.
I know, it's so weird.
Yeah. I mean, like, and for Best Actor, I mean, Sean Penn certainly deserved it, but Ben Kingsley absolutely could have won for House of Sand.
Yeah, Fox. That's true.
He was incredible in that. But you know,
he's already got one.
He's already got one. They've all got them. You know, let's make room. You know, where's Scott Kahn's Oscar?
I know.
Yeah, I got an acceptance speech for him.
Yeah, it's right here.
Yeah, I got your acceptance speech right here. They're not gonna play you off.
Get in the car. Yeah,
get in the car.
Oh, that was so scary.
Rolled up. You know, the rolled up bulletin in my hand. Oof. Yeah. Well, we I think the orchestra is smacking their bulletin to get us in the car because we are actually being played off right up river.
Ugh, I knew it. I knew it would happen.
I could feel it. My shoes were getting wet. I didn't like it. Where can folks find more of you?
They can find me on my other podcast, The Good Vanilla, which is a Barefoot Contessa podcast, or you can follow me on Instagram at Nick Kochanov. How about you?
Well, you can still find me on my other podcast, All Right Mary, always, but certainly if you want to hear coverage of season 16, this is going to be your final weekend to hear it because the season is ending. This, as of, you're hearing this on a Friday, the season is ending this evening.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. For the record, I'm Team Safira, but it is probably, I know you don't really watch anymore, but it's definitely one of the closest races they've ever had where, like, really any of the top three could win.
Wow. Do you think Plain Jane is the villain? Is she going to win? Or would it be, like, crazy if she won?
Plain Jane could totally win. The villain narrative was, I mean, it's interesting how it evolved, but Nymphia is really the fan favorite. Plain Jane, she was great all season. She was the one we talked about the most, everybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Safira, it was like a Bianca Del Rio, like classic,
level.
Good at everything, great drag queen.
Give it to Safira, bring back Plain Jane for All Stars and that other guy you mentioned. I think that
absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so we shall see. We shall see. But of course, you can also find more of me on Instagram at ColinDrucker_, and you can get more of both of us on Instagram at a best supporting capacity, excuse me, at BSAPod.
Or you can send us an email at thebsapod@gmail.com.
Yeah, and you got some wicked peepers. Keep them peeled because, we got the best supporting after show coming just down the river. And we got a lot to catch up on. I mean, I have a few three. I got things.
You got stuff. Colin saw Oh Mary. Oh, my gosh. I can't wait to talk about that.
Yes, we can talk about Oh Mary.
We got the basement yard. I watched Palm Royale. I dipped my toes at the Palm Royale.
Oh,
the new Kristen Wiig show. Yes.
I take it all back, folks. We have a ton to talk about. So this is a great time to join us. Every week on the Best Supporting After Show, you get a whole extra episode on Patreon, catching up on the things that we've been watching, doing, sometimes even eating. I actually have food updates.
Nice. And
you get early access to episodes just like this. And all of that is $5 a month. That's it. That's all. That's all we ask for.
What a steal. Yeah. I'm going to sign up.
I'm going to sign up. Anyway, I think it is very much apparent that we need to get into two pre-owned lease straight ourselves named Ruth and Cheryl and get the hell out of Stepford.
I'll get the keys.
Sounds and good. I'll get in the back seat. That's
that
a Mystic
dark.
River joke. Yeah. Too soon.
That was
too
dark.
Soon.
Yeah.
And that, as they say,
is that.